This episode is proudly sponsored by The Helix, a new innovation district located in New Brunswick, New Jersey, the heart of the Northeast Corridor. The Helix provides a critical ecosystem for innovation by offering a range of physical environments, a vibrant community of leading innovators, and a strategic central location on the Northeast Corridor. The Helix will uniquely mix workspaces, classrooms, laboratories, venues, and collaborative environments, creating a dynamic community and setting for innovative minds. Universities, startups, Fortune 500 companies, entrepreneurs, researchers, and many others will all call the Helix home. Thus far, the Helix has assembled a community of innovative private and public organizations, such as Rutgers Health, the New Jersey Innovation Hub, RWJ Barnabas Health, Hackensack Meridian Health, universities from Ireland and Israel, and others. The Helix is where ideas will come to life. To learn more, visit helixnj.com.
NJ.com and the Star Ledger, welcome to the Rutgers Rant, your one-stop podcast for the Scarlet Knights, with your hosts, Steve Politti, and Rutgers insiders, Brian Fonseca, and Pat Lenny. Let's start chopping.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Rutgers Rant. And when I say welcome back to the Rutgers Rant, I am really saying that directly to Patrick Lenny. Back. Two questions. One, how's the baby? And two, can he shoot a three-pointer? Those are the two questions I've got about the baby.
Yeah. I don't know. I think he's probably going to be a wrestling guy. That's probably more up his alley, because based on DNA and genetics, he's not going to be a big basketball. Height's not on his side. So that's probably the path for him. But
based on what I know about your family's genetics, I mean, there's male field hockey, right?
Yes. In Europe.
It's not in this country.
Elsewhere in the world. Yeah.
Well, you've got to be the kind of parent that supports your child and move someplace that has a good male field hockey feeder system. That's what I think. So,
well, it's a huge disappointment. Where I live currently does not even have a girls field hockey team at the high school. So that's,
come on. Nutley High doesn't have girls field hockey?
Oh, it's devastating.
Get the hell out of here. I'm calling Joe Pyra right now. I'm getting to the bottom of this.
But everybody's doing great. I'm so happy to be back. Got a lot of wrestling to talk about. So happy to be back on the dial here, and good to see you guys too. I really missed you guys the last month.
We did miss you too, because I don't know if you've listened to the podcast. All we do is bitch at each other. So having you back, someone else to tell us how bad the basketball team is. All right, we're going to talk about wrestling, but we probably should start with hoops. And we are reaching the end of what can only be described as a very disappointing season. Big Ten tournament coming up this week. Fonseca, you'll be on the ground out there. I don't think, based on what I saw with the Ohio State game, I don't think you'll be there long. Maybe long enough to get some Twin Charlies and walk around Minneapolis once and look at the Mary Tyler Moore statue. But for the most part, this looks like a team that has just punched the card and is done with this.
Yeah, and it's hard not to follow their lead too, right? So I have an early flight Wednesday morning. I will get in. I will get a Juicy Lucy.
Place. That's what they're called, Juicy Lucy's. Right.
Yeah. Where I get it will be determined soon. And then I will go to the Target Center. My expectation is, based on what we've seen in the last 2 weeks, is that they will lose. And I have a flight back at 7 a.m. on Thursday morning. And the way the universe works, they might win, and I have to push that flight back to Friday morning. But again, based on what I saw Sunday, based on what we saw in the last 2 weeks, where Rutgers lost 6 of the last 7 games of the year, I would be surprised if they defeated Maryland in the third match of the year between Steve Peichel and Kevin Willard. These two just can't get rid of each other.
Yeah, the game against Ohio State was, I was just surprised. It's 30-28, I think, at halftime. And I'm thinking, all right, well, maybe this is the kind of game that, you know, the defense takes over. They muddle it up and you're down to like one of those 59-58 decisions that they've won in the past. But no, I mean, you know, even that part of the game vanished. You know, defensively, they were bad and they just can't. It's just, it can't hit a shot. It is just mind-boggling how bad they are in shooting the basketball, shooting free throws. I mean, they were fouled a bunch in that game, and they still couldn't score. I mean, it was just really painful to watch.
Yeah, it's been painful to watch all season. It's just kind of been a culmination of the whole year, right? Guys can't hit shots, which leads eventually to some letdown on the defensive end, because you can only defend for so long. When you miss the first 11 shots of the game, it was a miracle they were only down 2 at the half.
Yeah.
And then you go on a near 10-minute span without a field goal in the second half, it makes it impossible to win. Ohio State really poured it on at the end because they kind of have to build their resume for the NCAA tournament, which is somehow still alive. And look, it's just the numbers here I have in front of me are brutal, right? Rutgers is shooting 28.9% on threes. That's 346th nationally. They're shooting 43.9% on twos. 43.9% is roughly what Northwestern shoots on threes
Oh my
in Big Ten
gosh.
play. And Rutgers are shooting 43.9% on twos, and they're shooting 66% on free throws. I don't care if you have the greatest defense in the history of the sport.
Yeah.
I don't care if you have six guys defending at every time. That's just not good enough to win basketball games. And that's kind of been what plagued this team from the jump. And it's made a very, very, very difficult job for Steve Peichel and the coaching staff to overcome. And clearly they haven't, because this is the first time in 5 years they have a losing record in the regular season.
Pat, some fresh eyes on this. You've been watching this at home. I mean, what surprised you the most in what you've seen from this team?
Well, first off, my son EJ was born during the win streak, and I thought he was going to be the good luck charm that spurred
Yeah.
the team back into good graces, but that turned quickly. And my whole thing this whole season was what has transpired with Cliff, and we always thought that this was going to be his team, and he was just going to absolutely dominate the Big Ten and look like he was ready for the NBA. And I think whether it was people not getting him the ball, whatever the reason was for his regression, as Cliff went, this team went, and that was the most glaring thing for me down the stretch too. It's just like he had that little spurt as the team was winning with obviously Jeremiah Williams as well, and then it's just that was my biggest thing. As Cliff went, this team went, and he should have just been a dominant player that was right there with Edie, that was able to will this team, and it just never happened. So that was my biggest takeaway.
We saw a very emotional Cliff Andy Mills photo. If you haven't seen it, it's just a wonderful image. Shows how much he cares about this place. I think he was really, having his brother here certainly must have made that. But I also think he knows this is the end. Like, I didn't, Brian, unless I'm completely misreading this situation, I know people inside the program think, yeah, it's 50-50. I think it's 5-95. I think he's gone. I think he knows it. I think he knew it before this game. I think he's known it all season. I mean, I get it that there's still some uncertainty. Maybe I'll be completely wrong, but he did not look like a player who's coming back.
Yes, I agree. He said twice this weekend that he still hasn't made a decision, but that's what they're going to say no matter what. His actions, to your point, speak much louder. I was pretty close to him because I was filming the ceremony down there, and I first noticed he was crying when he went to go line up for the photo, and you could just tell he's fighting so hard not to cry. He's like mouthing curse words, he's pinching his nose, he's grabbing on to the framed jersey, just holding on so
Oh.
tight. And his brother Alfred kind of puts his hand over his shoulder, and he just kind of starts letting go from there because he knows it's okay to show some emotion, right? And the crowd is chanting one more year, one more year. And he said he heard them and he appreciates the love, but after the game he's saying he didn't want to go out this way. And his guardian, Muhammad Oliver, told Jerry Carino of the Asbury Park Press on Thursday that while Cliff has another year, he probably isn't going to use it. Now, obviously, that gives you a bit of space there, right? But it kind of follows what Cliff said before the season to you. It follows the sentiment we've had all year. And while I do think the chances of him returning are higher now than they were in August when you guys talked, I would be surprised based on everything that's happened if he does come back. I agree that that felt like a person who knew this was his last game. And I guess the joking answer is, if you had to play in that offense, I guess you'd cry a
Yeah.
little bit too,
Well,
because
that's part. Yeah, that's a good point. And maybe if he's gonna stay in college, he should stay in college someplace else. I think that's one takeaway I had. But I don't think he's gonna stay in college. I think it's time to start his professional career. And he's got a family to. He's got people who rely on him, right? I mean, this is not, this is one of these players who's got to earn some money. I think that's a big thing for him.
and he's getting up there in age, which is weird to say of a 22-year-old, but as a prospect, that makes you ancient, right? And maybe he feels somewhere else could help him develop, because I'm not sure. His stats have been worse this year. That is largely affected by his supporting cast around him. But I do think there is some untapped potential that he's not unlocking here at Rutgers. Maybe if Rutgers hires Jae Young again, who was, I believe, here during his freshman year, and he feels maybe that can help him unlock, that will help. But you got to think that either the G League or another college program that has a storied history of developing bigs, whatever it may be, might be better for his development. Because at this point, he's done a lot for the program. I think when you're Cliff at this age, I don't think it's hard to blame him if he wants what's best for him. And what's best for him might not be at Rutgers. I think you're right. There's three options. He stays at Rutgers. He goes professional. He transfers somewhere else. If I'm Cliff, I do think staying at Rutgers is probably the least attractive option just based on what it could do for him, other than building his legacy, which I asked him about it and he didn't elaborate much. I'm just not sure how much that will factor in his decision. Just want, because if you stay here, you play on next year's team, you go on a deep run, you're the veteran guy, you're the face of the program with those two young freshmen. Yeah. That's a selling point. I'm just not sure it's as strong a selling point as all the other things.
All right. So, Pat, I'm going to let you sit this one out since you've been away. But the only thing anybody wants to talk about is who's staying, who's going. So let's just go through it. I mean, we're saying no on Cliff. He's going. I think I'm watching this, and this is going to sound harsher than I need it to be. But in some ways, I think Steve Peichel should just throw open the doors and say, "All right, you guys think you can play somebody else, play somewhere else. Go right ahead, like Mawat Mag. Okay, all right, yeah, go." I mean, really, like you know, look what you've done this season. Like, where are you going? You going to another Power Five team? I get, maybe he's talented, but I mean, I don't know. If you're a coach on the other side of that equation and you saw his season, you'd be like, oh, well, all right. So what, you know, I mean, I don't think a lot of these guys could have options. So that might change who stays and who goes, but let's start there. I mean, you had a chance to talk to Mawat Mag. What's your sense of this whole entire situation that just, you know, it just seems a little off is the best word I can use for it.
A little fishy. I agree.
Fishy.
Now, I want to start this segment by Steve Peichel has learned his lesson from last year where he let things kind of drag on. He's a good coach. He likes his guys and he believed in that face value and he let things kind of go late. And then in May and June, he kind of got bit from behind and he saw his two veteran guards leave late and that resulted in this season happening, right? That's not going to happen this year. I think they're going to be much more proactive this year. They're going to have much more direct conversations. And you'll see guys that are leaving are going to be leaving a lot earlier than next year, precisely to prevent a situation like last year and to give them a head start in kind of filling the holes they have on their roster, which there are a lot, as you've seen watching this team. Mawat Mag, he has played, I think, one game in the last 2 weeks or 3 weeks. He's been out for the last three or four games. I do think there is some form of injury. I do think he has pain in his left leg, in his calf. That's what he referred to it as, a calf strain. But I don't know this for a fact, but my sense is that let's say Rutgers was on the bubble and needing to win a game to make it to the NCAA tournament. I think there is a chance he could have played. That's just what it feels like. I think he's gone. I would be shocked if he's on next year's roster. I think it'll be Swift. I think he'll be an attractive prospect in the market. I really do. He's a proven defender in high major college basketball. And while he's not a great scorer, he's a perfect glue guy for a team that's really good, that he can make them great. So I think we've discussed this in the past. I think it'll be a major loss for Rutgers. I really do. I think he'd be a great role guy on next year's team. But again, it just seems like his mind is made up, and I would be surprised if he was on next year's team.
Yeah, he's got to be. He could be a great role guy if you want to be in a place. If you don't, then, I mean, it's not good. Yeah, that's tough. That's tough to accept the role on a team when, you know. So I don't know. I agree with you. He's gone.
Two things. All right. Two things. I don't blame him, right? He's a four-year guy. He's been at the school for 4 years. He's paid his dues. He has one more year of college. He could probably make a lot more money somewhere else if he puts his name in the open market. From a personal level, I don't think it's a bad decision. So I don't think he's going to be the guy anywhere. I don't think Mawat Mag is good enough to be the number one option on any team, right? So he's going to play a role no matter where. But maybe, you know, he wants some greener pastures, somewhere new, and where he can make a little bit of money in his last year of college. That, to me, makes sense.
Derek Simpson is a guy I think should stay. I don't know if he will stay. I'm not as down on him as the fan base. He is a conundrum, but I just do think that if you're looking at a team of like promising pieces to put around Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey, he at least seems to me like he could be a 20-minute guy. He could be a guy you can count on for some offense if you get him in the right role. But his numbers this year, man, 29.4% from three, 8 points a game. What do you think?
I agree with you in that he would be a great role player. He could be a great seventh, eighth guy off the bench if he wants to accept that role as a junior, which is hard to do after you were a starter all sophomore year, probably earlier than he should have been. He wasn't ready for that. He kind of was thrust into that role because of the circumstances we talked about before, and take a lot less shots. I don't know how many shots he's averaging. I don't have it in front of me, but he's taking a lot of shots.
Taking a lot of shots.
And a lot of them are going in. So he would have to accept the role where he's playing less minutes, taking a lot less shots, and contributing to winning in these other ways of, you know, assisting teammates, making the dirt, doing the dirty work defensively. I think it's 50-50. I really have no sense of whether he will or won't. I think they would take him back. I think it is up to whether he wants to play a reduced role or be more of a guy at a lower level, which I think he'd be a great player in like a mid-tier A-10 team, or like, like the guy at a low major team. I'm just not sure that's what he wants to do, right? So I think that he is one of the guys that I feel is a swing case.
All right, Jermichael Davis, I think, will stay. I'm not sure. I mean, yeah, he's a developmental player, but again, now you're looking at 23.5% from three and 52% from the free throw line. I don't think you can have a guard with those numbers in the Big Ten playing a big role. Do you think he'll stay, and do you think he'll have a role?
He's as close to a stone cold lock as I can give you, because I don't know for sure. This portal thing is impossible to predict. I would be surprised if he left. He's best friends with Ace Bailey. He had a pretty good freshman year. Offensively, he was brutal, right? But I don't think he came in with a reputation of being a good offensive guard. I think he's shown he's a really good defensive guard. If you lose Mwat Mag, you can maybe hope that he moves up into that role as that defensive stopper, because I do think he has that potential, and he has definitely the desire to do that, which is very important. I think you just have to accept that he's not going to be scoring from the guard position, so you'll have to pair him with a Dylan Harper or a Jeremiah Williams or somebody who could score. I don't think him or Derek Simpson could play major minutes either way because of the lack of scoring, but I think he has a role for next year for sure, and again, I would be very surprised if he doesn't come back next year.
Gavin Griffiths, I'm sure they want him to come back. Again, he certainly played better later in the season. 27.5%. Very few things, wronger things have been said in this podcast than me thinking he was going to take Cam Spencer's role. Wow, let's just forget that ever happened. Edit that out. Can you go back to that podcast and cut that out? Because that was wrong. Oh, what's the word I'm looking for? Wrong. But again, talented. Seems to be playing better. What do you think?
Do you also want me to edit out the part where I told you in live, in real time, I think you're very, very wrong, Polite. I think you are completely off the mark. You're crazy. Do you want me to edit that part out too?
Yeah, it'd be good. If you could just cut that, and if you scrub that entire thing from the internet, I appreciate it. Thanks.
As a quick aside, I think that's important to remember that when we talk this offseason about not the two main members of the class. I think Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper are the real deal. But when we try to figure if Lathan Somerville will play 25 to 30 minutes in Cliff Omori's place, remember that. Okay, yes, that's my main takeaway from all this. I don't think Lathan Somerville is ready to be a starting center in the Big Ten, and it's unfair to do so to him, just like it was very unfair to do that with Gavin Griffiths.
Yep, totally.
Is he better? I think he's been playing better the last month of the year. It's hard to play a little worse than he was, frankly. And look, he shot 1 of 10 against Ohio State, right? I think a major thing he has to do.
Did he really? I missed that. Yeah.
It didn't feel like it, right? But
yeah,
it was. A major thing he has to work on is shot discipline. He has no regard for where he's shooting from, what the rhythm of the offense is, like what time is it on the shot clock? Is it a good shot? He kind of, if he feels like it, just throws a shot up, right? Which I think is why he's shooting 27.5% on threes. Right. And this is despite the fact before the Ohio State game, he was shooting like 38.7% in the six games before that. Right. Yeah. So I think the potential for him to be a good offensive player is there. And he was beating guys off the dribble on Sunday, like showing a little bit of a different part of his offensive game, which is good. And you could see the confidence is growing. I think that was a big issue for him early on in his freshman year, which happens to a lot of freshmen. As for him coming back, I am more confident in that now than I was maybe a month or two ago.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a lock. I think it makes sense for both sides. I think I don't think you could depend on him to become the sharpshooter you need. That's priority number 1, 2, and 3 for me in the portal for Rutgers as things stand. I don't think you could depend on him being that guy, but I certainly think you keep him around. The potential's there. You hope that he has a big summer and he has that sophomore jump, because there's some signs of it. But again, I think if you bring him back, he'd be, again, a 7th, 8th, 9th option off the bench that you could hope comes in and adds some offensive spark.
He's also not going to UConn. Like, he's another guy who doesn't, he's not going to have these options. Like, oh, he's just going to transfer to Michigan. No. All right. Looking down the rest of the roster, Oscar's gone. looking, I mean, will we have, will Wolfolk be back? I mean, who, any of the rest of those guys, which one of them will be back and have a role? Put it that way.
I agree that Oscar's gone. I would be very, very surprised if he came back. Jeremiah Williams, I think, is back. I would be surprised if he left.
Forgot all about him. Sorry. Yep.
No, you're good. I know there's some concern, and I understand it. But one, his very hot start has cooled down significantly. Two, this is his Rutgers is his third school in 4 years. He would go to his fourth school. He would leave Rutgers after it gave him a chance, after it fought with him through the gambling thing, through the two-time transfer thing. It gave him a platform to play again. I just think,
Be kind of cruddy. It'd be kind of cruddy if he left under the circumstances, wouldn't it? Whew.
yeah, yes, and I think it just makes sense because he'll have a role on a very, very talented team. I think he would be an asset for next year's team. And not that I would be surprised if he left, because that's the situation. Who knows, right? But I think he'll be in on next year's team. The big situation is interesting between Antoine Wolfolk and Emmanuel Ogbele. I think only one of them stays. I just can't imagine they have those two back, plus Lathan Somerville, plus the chance of Cliff Omori. I don't think that makes sense. And I think the one that has the most chance of coming back is Emmanuel Ogbele, because you have to think he is more progression in his development. I think Wolfolk's have a bit of a disappointing year. And I think Ogbele has the skill set that Wolfolk doesn't have, in that he's a 7'3", huge, can be a defensive stopper, and has a lot of progression on the offensive end. But again, he'll be a 5 to 10 minute a game guy, but he's good at, assurance to have in the back pocket.
So all you need, Steve Peichel, is at least one big man, at least one dead aim 3-point shooter, and at least one leader blue guy. So yeah, good luck in the portal. Should be an interesting. We'll do that next week, though. We'll talk about who's coming in next week, maybe. I don't know. We'll just give it a shot next week.
We could break down the priorities more, but I think you nailed it. I think sharpshooter is, you need a sharpshooter. They are the worst 3-point shooting team in high major basketball, I'm fairly certain, if not number one, two, or three. They have not been good at shooting threes for years, aside from when they had Cam Spencer, who was a portal lottery hit. They hit the absolute lottery with Cam Spencer. So if you could repeat that again, that'd be huge. You can get a reliable big who's good defensively, competent offensively, a defensive wing. A Caleb McConnell, Mawat Mag type that you can
Just
depend on.
go get a Caleb McConnell in the portal. I love
Hey, listen, Caleb McConnell had high market value if he wanted to leave, but he decided to stay. Mawat Mag is deciding to leave. He'll probably have high market value. Maybe someone, Rutgers could find a guy in reverse. They probably need that guy. And another guard who can like attack the rim and create. I know Dylan Harper has that skill set. Jeremiah Williams has that skill set a little bit. Maybe a third guy to come off the bench. I don't know, but the roster crunch is also real. They're going to end the season two scholarships over the limit, so they're going to have a lot of attrition. It's going to be fascinating to see how this all works out.
All right, we'll come back and talk about that after the Big Ten tournament when we recap it. We'll see if Fonseca has to change his flights. That's what I'm rooting for now. I'm rooting for a win just for some travel chaos for you. I know, it's good.
Experience the Heldrich Hotel, a luxury hotel that's perfect for both the business and leisure traveler. Ideally located within minutes of Rutgers University, the Heldrich is convenient to all the action and activities at SHI Stadium, Jersey Mike's Arena, and the Rutgers University campus. The moment you walk through the doors of the Heldrich Hotel and Conference Center, you know you're someplace different. A place with an independent spirit and a boutique vibe. A place where you can immerse yourself in your meeting or event as easily as you can the local culture. Located in the heart of the city, the Heldrich lets you experience all that New Brunswick has to offer. Whether you're coming to New Brunswick for a fun weekend with friends, in town for a Scarlet Knights game, or attending a business meeting, book your accommodations today at theheldrich.com.
All right, Pat, speaking of travel chaos, you still there? You didn't.
Yeah, I just
Okay.
had I was combing my hair the whole time. It was
You feed
great.
the baby. It's good. Change a
Yeah.
diaper. Lovely. All
It
right,
was
let's
great.
talk some wrestling. It was a good showing in College Park, from what I've read.
It was. It was.
Best
Yeah. I
finish
mean,
in since the glory days, right? I mean, that was pretty
yeah.
much, yeah.
Pre-glory days even. It was 2016 that we're talking Big Ten era. So 2016, they had 10 guys qualify for nationals. That's and they finished fifth. With so all 10 guys qualified and they finished fifth. That was the highest point total ever. This year was the second highest point total. They got seven through and had a champion, which they didn't do in 2016. But yeah,
So
the
was this their
glory
best ever
days.
then, maybe? If you put it all together? Yeah.
From like a competitive, like when you really look at it, the best thing was that they had six guys finish sixth or better. That to me showed that this was a more well-rounded team. Whereas in like 2016, they had 10 guys qualify, but like some of them were, you know, eighth, ninth, 10th. I think that makes a big difference. And they had the headliner in Dylan Shauver, who just really lit it up and was just beyond impressive. So.
He looked like, I mean, I was, is that a surprise how dominant? I get it, maybe winning wasn't a surprise, but how dominant he was? I mean, kicking ass.
First of all, he lost to that kid from the kid that he wrestled in the final. He lost to twice this year, close
Oh,
matches, and
wow.
then came out and dominated him.
Yeah.
And wasn't just him, he dominated in the semifinals, really dominated the whole way through, which was like something that a Rutgers wrestler hasn't done since Soriano and Ashnall, right? Like guys that just came out and said, you know what, I'm better than you. I'm gonna just take it to you. And that was incredible. It was really great to see. And I know we've talked on this podcast even about how Goodell has taken some heat for losing to top teams in duels and not being able to get the big win. I think this kind of like gave him a little bit of juice going into nationals because everyone was kind of down on this program a little bit, but this was like invigorating in a lot of ways and kind of justified that he said that this team was going to be really good. And I think that they showed that this weekend.
Now, does Shauver have a shot at Nationals? Is
Yeah,
he like
he
a good
really does.
shot, or we're handicapped
So like
that?
the top of that weight class is incredible. The top of 133 pounds is really good. They have a world champion who's still in college, Vito Arugio from Cornell. Yeah, it's crazy. And then he lost to a kid from Lehigh twice this year. So, and then there's this veteran guy, Dayton Fix, who's been in college for 13 years. He like was actually in a crazy match with Nick Soriano. So if you put that, just shows you how long he's been in school. So those top three guys are really good. But if Shauver wrestles like he wrestled at the Big Tens, he's got a shot to beat any of them. So yeah, he's definitely got a chance. And even if you go down to 125 pounds, it's a crazy weight class where there's like 15 guys that are all basically the same. They've all beaten each other. And so Dean Peterson has really threw himself into the mix of like all American, at least all American status, and potentially like being in the hunt too. So I think it's going to be really, really exciting. If you're a Rutgers fan, like jump on the bandwagon now because it'll be a fun weekend in Kansas City, and it could be just like out of nowhere, really.
Just as an aside, if you're not following Nick Siriano on social media, I highly recommend. Brian, are you following Nick Siriano on social media?
He's an enigma, that guy.
I highly recommend it because it is just, I mean, every post is just a little slice of crazy. I mean, I really hope he gets to Paris because I want to cover him in the Olympics and I want to take him to the Louvre and walk around. Like I just like I'm really I just want to I just he's just. He's nuts in a good way. I love it. I love nuts. Nuts is
Well, Steve,
good.
you've been around long enough to follow. I've been following Soriano since Bergen Catholic. I'm sure you've been
No.
in the same kind of realm, and he's never changed. This is who he's been his entire life, and I think Brian said enigma. That's the perfect word for him. He's just like
But
high end,
yeah.
just the prototypical wrestler. Like
Something about
mind.
those 25-second videos just brings out the absolute crazy, and it's great. Anyway, that's an aside. All
The top
right,
comment
can't
on Tuesday is his thing. If you're really
Yes,
following him, it's such a handsome Tuesday.
Handsome Tuesday.
Where do you come up with that?
I don't know. It's great.
The top comment on every one of his videos is something to along the lines of this guy is a serial killer, like in plain sight. So that kind of just sums it up right there. Hopefully he keeps all serial killing to the wrestling mat because I am worried about the real world once he
Handsome
retires.
Tuesday.
Well, this it's perfect for when this guy goes to MMA. He's gonna be just like the all over ESPN, gonna
Just
be the face.
absolutely,
Yeah.
absolutely. All right. So Kansas City, you going to Kansas City?
Yes, me and Bill
Yes.
Evans will be there
Oh, lovely.
representing the NJ Advanced Media. Yeah, so
All right.
should be great.
So reasonable expectations then. Shoffer certainly podium quality. How many All-Americans are you thinking? What are we looking at?
Yeah, I think multiple All-Americans, and that's significant because last year they didn't have any. It ended a 10-year streak of having an All-American. So I think Shauver is certainly in the mix. Dean Peterson, like I said, is in the mix. John Posnanski's been there before as an All-American. Jackson Turley's been there before as an All-American. And then the heavyweight, Yaroslav Slavkovski, also could be in the mix. He was he had another good tournament. Yeah, and I'm sure I'm forgetting someone, but I think definitely reasonable to say multiple All-Americans, and it's not out of the question to think that Rutgers could be in the shot for a national title this year, whether it's Peterson or Shriver. I think this weekend proved that they're capable of winning. And when you win the Big Ten title, right, like that's throwing you right into the mix automatically. So
Right.
think realistic. It's realistic.
And
Would I be surprised if they did it? No, but it would be just an incredible accomplishment because like Soriano and Ashnault came in, and this is what I wrote about with Shauver. Like Soriano and Ashnault came in as the most highly acclaimed high school wrestlers ever in New Jersey. Everyone knew they were kind of on this path to probably win a national title in college, go to the Olympics, so on and so on. Shauver, if you remember, like went into a red shirt last year because he was battling for a lineup spot. So that year of development was just so crazy, and he's come so long, so far. So really, really impressed with him. Really impressed.
does a season turn off all? I mean, we're going to stop talking about disappointing Scott Goodale program. We moved on to
It's so crazy
remembering.
how this changed. Like, if you follow like the social media comments and all that, like after they lost to Minnesota in the duel, and even I wrote it. It was the same old story after losing to Minnesota. Social media was on fire. Does it absolve that? Not entirely, because you can't say we're gonna crack this huge list and then not do it. And like, you gotta take the good and the bad. So. But if they have a national champion and multiple All-Americans or multiple All-Americans, it certainly shows that they were like they beat Minnesota at the big. They finished ahead of Minnesota in the Big Ten tournament. They came within a point and a half of Ohio State, who they sh got crushed by in the duel. So, yeah, I think they've shown growth. And at the end of the day, this is an individual sport. You always got to keep that in mind. Like the goal of wrestling is always to perform here in March as an individual. So yeah, I think Goody has saved his job this year, to say the
Gotcha. All right. Excellent. Thank you for that. Excellent report. All right. We have a few questions. Most of the questions were who's coming back for the basketball team, and we have addressed that. But let's get our Rutgers insider folks. People kind of, this is great. This is a good recommendation. I'm going to start with this. There's a show on A&E called WWE Rivals. There's an episode about Randy Savage and Jake Roberts that you must watch at your earliest convenience because we need to discuss it. Okay. I like that. I need TV recommendations. This is good. I'm going to put that on the list. You guys, neither one of you watch this A&E show? No?
I mean, this is the wrestling podcast, so
Yeah.
it's not now or never to talk
We're
about
going
WWE too, so.
to have a lot of months to talk about not much. So let's do it. Good idea. All right. So we get a bunch of Steve Peichel offense questions. This is a general one, and we've kind of danced around it, but perhaps this is Steve Peichel's worst season as Rutgers coach. What's the biggest takeaway for him? Really interesting, I mean, and I took some Twitter heat for pointing this out in January that I didn't think he was doing a good job. He turned it around with the 4-game winning streak. But I don't think Steve Peichel, the coach, could overcome Steve Peichel, the roster manager. Is that a good assessment of that, Brian?
Yes, and I think he was asked after the Ohio State loss about his biggest lesson, and it was essentially that of roster management, not being able to wait, of having to be more proactive and adapting to the new timeline with the transfer portal. We've talked about this ad nauseum, but the loss of two starting guards who were a big part of your offense really hampered this team from the jump, and they had to go into the portal late to find solutions that, one, either didn't come in time, and Jeremiah Williams didn't come until February. And two, Austin Williams is a guy, he's in his seventh year. He's dealt with a ton of injuries during his career. This is a guy who every Monday was going into the trainer's room, getting his knee drained so that he can maybe play.
Yeesh.
Like he's going through so much stuff just to play. And it's valiant that he tried and gave it an effort, but it's just not good enough if you want to be a winning Big Ten team. So I think that's his biggest lesson. He has to be more proactive, build his roster better, and have better players so that you can run a better offense. Because as we said many times, you could have the greatest offensive mind in the history of the sport, but if you have me out there shooting threes, they're not going to go down, right? So I think you need better players, and I think that's going to be the objective of this offseason. They got a pretty good start with Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper. Let's see what they can build on with that in the portal.
I just want to add one comment to that. I thought Keuchel's biggest flaw this season was not finding a guy to turn the team over to, right? After that great run of Ron Harper and Geo Baker, right? Like they had faces of the program. I think they never identified someone that could just lead this team. And it should have been Cliff. Should have been Cliff.
Right. Yep. And it was going to be Jeremiah for a while, and that didn't work either. Yeah. He never set in a rotation. Like, I was
Right.
just kind of amazed at watching the end of that game. We still got Oscar out there. We still got, Fernandes can't play, disappeared, play. I mean, Jamichael was the guy for a while. I mean, yeah, just a lot of things like that where he was grasping at dudes, trying to find somebody. Never found it. A follow-up question to the coaching question. Pikes has never had to deal with expectations really at RU. Next year he will. How far will Pikes have to go in the tournament to not have fans turn on him? I'm going to say this, and I don't want like people to, lose their you know what, but how about but let's make the tournament first, right? I mean, let's. You would think that Dylan Harper, Ace Bailey is enough to certainly inject in talent, but I mean, I'm, if you told me right now you got to mortgage the house and bet on Rutgers making the tournament. I mean, I would certainly bet on them making it versus them not making it, but I mean, I'd be sweating it out.
A vast majority of teams that have 2 5-star freshmen have made the NCAA tournament. I'm not concerned about that. My concern is more, are they going to be able to avoid it, the fact it's the last week of February and they're all still on the bubble and we're wondering if they're going to make the tournament and if they're going to go to Dayton. Dayton is unacceptable with the amount of talent they'll have next year. This team should be good enough with the base it has with those two guys that it should be in contention for a Big Ten title. It should be in contention for a top four finish in the Big Ten. At that point, making it to the tournament is not even a discussion.
What base, but should be good. Like, what base do you see to make you think? So you're convinced you watch one, and you were there. You watched Dylan Harper at the rack. We know he's really good. He's barely NBA. It's number two pick. You've got enough players around them right now that you're comfortable competing for the Big Ten title. You think that this team, what you've watched, Ryan Fonseca, gun to your head.
This team's going to be completely different, though. This team that they have right
Well,
now is
yeah,
completely irrelevant.
but you get okay. Then take that step. You get the NIL money to go out and get to go in the portal and have big portal wins.
You have enough NIL money to get two of the top four prospects in the country. I think that saves up some money for other people in other positions. I think there is some part of it where you can convince guys that you're playing alongside two NBA players who will have a lot of NBA scouts in attendance, so you'll have a lot of attention. I think that will play into it. I think so. I will give them the benefit of the doubt because I don't think they can mess this up. I don't think they can afford to mess this up. I think the next 12 months of Rutgers basketball will determine the next 5 years of Rutgers basketball.
That's such a
This
great
is
point. Yep.
an unlosable. You cannot mess up this opportunity. We did a story when Dylan Harper committed. There have been 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. This is the 10th class with two top five prospects in the past 15 years. The first nine all made the NCAA tournament and all won a game at the NCAA tournament. So that's like the floor of expectation for a class of this level. The NCAA tournament is a fickle thing, right? I think it's a bit harsh to be putting like they have to make the second weekend, they have to make the Final Four, all this stuff, right? I think the thing you can control is they have to finish. Top four in the Big Ten. They have to put together a strong non-conference schedule and play well in it. They have to look good. They have to live up to the hype. That's unquantifiable, I know,
Yes,
but
right.
they have to play as well as we think they can. They have to maximize this opportunity, make a run at a Big Ten title, make a run at the Big Ten tournament, make a run at the NCAA tournament. And at the end, there will be a feeling of like, did they take advantage of this opportunity? I think that's what they have to do.
I just think too, like when we did the story for when Dylan Harper committed that Brian was referencing is such a great stat with the nine teams making it. We also profiled like what kind of recruits are these kids, and they're generational. Dylan Harper is, you know, like a, I think back to like how Carl Anthony Towns led Kentucky as a true freshman, and Ace Bailey is going to be just like that. Even DJ Wagner just recently coming out of Camden went to Kentucky. He was posted double. He scored, he was averaging like 10 points a game for a really good Kentucky team. These guys are, you don't miss when these kids come in with such high, like it would be so unfathomable for these guys to be not as good as expectations. So I just, Brian did a really good job outlining that. And I think, yeah, the consistency is what you can control. So like you said, playing well consistently in the Big Ten and moving up the standings there is more important than thinking about, all right, can we get to the Sweet 16?
All right, a couple of questions on three-pointers. And this is, I think this is interesting. When you bring these guys in, do we know that they can improve that part of the game? And this is the point that the commenter makes. You simply can't win consistently at the top 50 rankings without a 35% plus as a team from three. And I think he's totally right. And I think this team is a long way off from it. I mean, you mentioned it, Brian. I didn't know that stat about Northwestern shoots 43%. I mean, why can't they get some, you know, some competence in that part of the game? You know, I mean, where is that going to come from?
The portal. They have to find a shooter in the portal. They have to find their next Cam Spencer, a guy who can be a knockdown shooter. There are going to be guys out there. A vast majority of players in college basketball will be in the portal this offseason. So find one of them, convince them to come here, show them the number that you're 28% on threes this year. You will come in and be seen as a god if you shoot 37%. People at Rutgers will think you're an alien. Who is this guy we found that can knock down three-pointers in a Rutgers uniform? So that's an attractive selling point. There are going to be guys who can shoot the ball. You got to find them. You got to convince them to come here. And you got to that's it. But I think that's the number one priority, because I agree. You can't win college basketball games consistently without knocking down threes in this day and age. Rutgers has not been able to do that. They have not been able to do that pretty much all of Steve Peichel's tenure, other than maybe the Cam Spencer year and the Ron Harper year. Ron Harper Jr. shot 38.7% on threes at volume. That's pretty good. So yeah, you just gotta find that guy. I think it's a great point. I don't know how much coaching could help. I don't think there's any guy on the current roster, aside from maybe Gavin Griffiths, that you can hope makes a big jump. I think a lot shooting, for the most part, is who you are, and there's just not a lot of shooters on the current roster, so you got to find it in the portal.
All right. One, it's a question about that along those lines. How influencing and active will Dylan and Ace be in recruiting the gaps for next year? It's a great question. I don't know that they have to be, you know, out there making phone calls but I do think that just their presence, especially Dylan's. I mean, if you're a guy and you're looking at different programs, the one thing you're going to look at is how much can they pay me. The second thing you're going to look at is who am I going to play with. And I think that that to me has got to be a big selling point. It's got to make it much easier for Steve Peichel to have those two guys.
Yeah, no question. It's almost like free agency in the NBA. It's right. Like, where do the stars want to go? They want to go to a team where there's going to be other stars that can push them to the top. So I think that recruits itself, like you said.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey have to be on the phone like a telethon, right? Like, I think they can be pulled in at certain times if they need to make a call to a guy, if a guy's on the fence. I don't think they need to be calling people they know. Like, I think, like you said, them being there is a very big selling point. And if they have to close the deal, I'm sure they'll be able to. I'm sure Dylan Harper is a good salesperson. He's friendly with a lot of top prospects in his class, and I'm sure even guys older than him. So if he's needed, I think he could do it. But I think just the fact you can say Dylan Harper will be creating for this offense, you could be the recipient on the other end of his passes, whether that's in the post, whether that's at the perimeter, whatever it is. So I think that will be helpful. Yes.
They're not going to play a single game of a meeting in March, and this is still going to be the most fascinating March that they've had in years just because of all this. It's going to be really, I can't wait to see what Steve Peichel comes up with. Be fun. All right. I love this. I put this in here. I don't know if we can answer the question, but it's just the great part about this podcast and about Rutgers sports in general is that it doesn't matter what time of year it is. There's always a football parking question. And wants to know the football parking donation minimums were jacked up for the season, which makes me think they're going to have less spots. Is work expected to start on the lacrosse field slash stadium before football season? No, right? They're not.
No, no, no.
They're just jacking it up because they think they can get it from you. You went to a bowl game. They're just, you know, they got bills to pay. That's why they're jacking it up, right?
Capitalism, baby. And you know what? People are gonna pay. All right? That's just how it is. I look, lo siento, I feel bad, but they jacked the parking up at the rack 100% from $20 to $30. That parking lot, if they were, you know, 24-7 right now, that place would be packed. All right. It is what it is.
And if you're
I
good,
still
yeah.
come. I still come back to it. It was 20, I think $25 to park for wrestling at the rack this year. That's more than a ticket costs. The whole thing is mind blowing. Based on my incredulous Rutgers education, I understand supply and demand though to this question. If you take away the supply of parking, or oh yeah, I'm just gonna pass. I'm just gonna pass on this comment because I've already said it wrong. But the spots are there are less spots. So demand goes up and prices go up. That's how supply and demand works. And I'll leave it at
I don't feel good
that.
about EJ's college savings at
Nailed
where that was starting. It was $20 to park at Manasquan, Camden.
Oh
Just
my
cost $20
goodness.
to park. We just accept that as part of like, yeah, the parking is just could always be insane.
Who's the congressman that always goes after the NGSA? Borzicelli?
Berzicelli, yeah. I don't know. I
Yeah.
don't know if he's still in. Is he still in Congress? It
I
might
don't
be.
know.
Yeah.
Someone's got to make a call to him. $28 to park for a high school game. That's
$20. Too
insane.
much. Too much. Yeah.
Insane.
All right. What else we got? We got some. I want to talk some Squan Camden. No, I'm kidding. Lacrosse, baseball. Lacrosse lost to Princeton. Got the doors blown out by Princeton. Eh?
Yeah, two ranked opponents, two losses this year for men's lacrosse. So they're beating the teams that they should. They're losing to the ranked teams. So I'm not sure what that says about their ceiling, but this doesn't seem, at least at this point, like a vintage dominating Rutgers team that will finish, you know, second or third in the Big Ten. But it's still early. Baseball is off to a good start. They are 10-4, although they lost their last two games of a series against High Point. That was their first series loss of the year. But they have a chance to bounce back. They're playing the Fighting Steve Politis, number 13, North Carolina,
Ooh,
in Chapel Hill.
down at Chapel
Baseball.
Hill.
Yeah, to
Baseball school, right,
Steve?
yeah,
UNC.
yeah, absolutely. That's good. Yeah, Bosch-Hemmer Stadium. It's good. That's a nice little venue down there. Absolutely, that's good.
They're playing today and tomorrow, Tuesday and Wednesday. And then they come back up for a series at Delaware over the weekend. And women's lacrosse open Big Ten play with a overtime home loss to Penn State on Saturday. Not great. They are 5-2 on the year. And they did defeat Oregon, a future Big Ten opponent, 15-7 in Piscataway. So that's a positive.
There you go. Take that, Oregon. All right, let's wrap it up. You've got to pack for your flight. We'll be back on Monday, I guess next week. We might as well be back on Monday to talk about the results out in Minneapolis. Preview the NCAA tournament that will not include the Scarlet Knights, barring the greatest run, unforeseen run in college basketball history. Yeah, we'll look forward to it then. Talk to you then.
Thank you for listening to the Rutgers Rant. To participate in the conversation and receive live updates about the Scarlet Knights directly to your phone, sign up at nj.com/insider.